The 1999 murder of Haman Lee in Baltimore, Maryland, and the prosecution and conviction of Adnan Syed and her murder has now been documented in multiple podcasts with dozens and dozens of episodes. It's been written about in hundreds of articles. It's been covered by every major news outlet and has launched a global movement for justice. And yet, there is much more to the story, including Adnan's own telling of it. St. Martin's Press brings you Adnan's Story, Murder, Justice, and the Case That Captivated a Nation, the first and seminal book about the case that I was honored to write with contributions from Adnan himself. The book releases September 6, 2016, but is already available for pre-order. Go to www.adnanstory.com to place your order and reserve your copy today. Hi, and welcome to the very first episode of Undisclosed, The State vs. Adnan Syed. Today's episode is Adnan's Day. My name is Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney, national security fellow, and I blog at splitthemoon.com, and I'm joined with my colleagues Susan Simpson and Colin Miller. Susan is an associate attorney at the Volkov Law Group in Washington, D.C., and she blogs The View from LL2. And Colin is an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and he also runs the Evidence Prof blog. The three of us are very excited to bring Undisclosed to you, and I want to tell you a little bit about what it's going to be about and the things we're going to cover in the course of the nearly 40 episodes that we do on this case. But before I tell you what it's about, it's important to start with what it's not about. Undisclosed is not Serial Part 2. We have no affiliation with the amazing folks at This American Life or with Sarah Koenig. They have no involvement in the production of Undisclosed, and likewise, we've never had any involvement with their production. But as many people know, I have been a longtime advocate for Adnan, and also he is a dear personal friend. He is the best friend of my younger brother. So naturally, I am very skeptical of the state's case, and I'm going to come at all of the information with an extremely biased perspective. But here to keep me in check are Susan Simpson and Colin Miller, both of whom have never met Adnan. They've never spoken to Adnan, and I never even knew who they were until I started reading their blogs about the case as Serial was ongoing. So I reached out to them and I said, listen, if you want to write about this case and you really want to investigate it, I want to give you all of the documents that I have and let you investigate, you know, completely independently as you will. And that's what I did. I made all of the electronic files accessible to them. And I would watch and read as they wrote about them, just like everybody else. I had no idea what they were going to be writing about or saying or how they were going to analyze the information they came across. But it did become apparent after not too long that people needed to hear the kinds of things that they were finding. And so we decided to put together a podcast so we could bring you all the information that Susan and Colin have uncovered as they've investigated Adnan's case. Now, having warned you that we are not Serial Part 2, it is important, though, that you go back and you listen to the first season of Serial before you start Undisclosed, because we are going to be referencing a lot of things that, unless you've heard Serial, are going to be very difficult to understand, like, for example, the Nisha call and the Linkin Park pings and characters in the case. So if you haven't listened to Serial, the first season about Adnan's case, stop right now, go back and listen to it, and then come back and join us. And if you have listened to it, well, welcome to Undisclosed, and I'm just going to ask for your patience as you dive in. And the reason for that is, like I said before, we aren't Serial Part 2. This is not an incredibly beautifully crafted narrative the way Serial is able to tell a story. We are three lawyers. We come at this with an investigative lens. The content is going to be very different. It's going to be very deep and granular. If you're interested in like the nitty-gritty details of the documents, doing a deep dive into the investigation, looking at all the legal aspects of this case, then this is this place for you. The other thing I'm going to ask your patience for is the production quality. I promise you, in a couple of episodes, it gets better. The first episode was rough on all of us because we were really winging it all by ourselves. Having said that, we still stand by everything that's in the episode, but we're going to ask you to hang in there until at least episode 3. By that time, we get our feet, we bring in some professional producers, and you're going to get a much better sounding product. But I promise you, it is worth the patience to get to the information that you're going to hear in Undisclosed, because it is stuff that will blow your mind. So again, thanks for being here, and we're going to start by letting Susan and Colin introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an associate with the Volkov Law Group, where I focus on white-collar defense and corporate compliance. I am also a blogger at the View from LL2, where I've been writing about Adnan Syed's case since shortly after I first started listening to Serial back in November of last year.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law. I'm also the creator and editor of Evidence Prof Blog. When I started listening to Serial last fall, I was immediately taken by its voice, the narrative, the near granular attempts to get to the bottom of the terrible tragedy that was the death of Haman Lee. On its own terms, Serial was wildly successful. That said, in the very first episode, Sarah laid out those terms. She wasn't a detective, not a private investigator, not even a crime reporter. As such, the podcast wasn't an attempt to delve into the complicated legal issues that surrounded the prosecution of Adnan Syed. It was those legal issues that led me to start blogging about the case and eventually to my participation in this podcast. I hope through this podcast, we can explain to you some of the complicated and thorny legal issues surrounding that prosecution and maybe in the process, get just a little bit closer to the truth.
So we are going to begin our investigation of what actually happened on January 13th, 1999, by starting with Adnan and his day. There is a bit of a misperception that Adnan has absolutely no recollection of his day whatsoever. I get asked this question all the time at talks that I do. People message it. They tweet it at me. How come Adnan doesn't remember anything? That's actually not true. Adnan did remember many portions of the day. And in fact, he had made notes to that effect that he had given to the attorney in September of 99, breaking down what he remembered, different periods and stuff. So what we're going to do is we're going to take what we have from Adnan, and then we're going to take all the statements that we have, from testimony to police statements to some of the grand jury stuff, and try to corroborate what Adnan has said, and try to figure out who's not remembering correctly and who is remembering correctly, and really try to nail down what he was doing and where he was at all day on January 13th.
Let's now turn our attention to the end of the school day on January 13th, 1999. We have two witnesses who recall seeing Adnan either at or immediately after the end of school at 2:15 p.m. The first of those is Becky. She recalls walking to the guidance counselor's office at about 2:20 p.m. She was accompanied by Aisha, her friends, and possibly Krista. While walking down the hallway, Becky recalls seeing Adnan and Hay walking in opposite directions and briefly making contact. In reference to the ride request mentioned by Krista before, Becky recalls Hay saying to Adnan, "Oh no, I can't take you. I have something else to do." She didn't say what else. In response, Becky recalls Adnan saying, "Okay, I'll just ask someone else." She's asked by defense counsel what she recalls Hay saying to her immediately after the end of school. According to Becky, she just said that she had to be somewhere after school. She didn't tell me where she was going, but she said she had to leave. Becky then recalls Hay heading to the door that led to her car. Unfortunately, defense counsel doesn't ask whether Adnan is part of this conversation or indeed the recipient of the information about Hay having to be somewhere after school. Question then becomes, did defense counsel drop the ball? Did she have strategic reasons for not mentioning Adnan? Did Becky forget Adnan being part of the conversation? Not entirely sure. What we do know is when Becky was interviewed by Sarah for Serial last fall, she was read her statement about Hay saying to Adnan she couldn't give him a ride because she had something else to do. In response, Becky said, "Okay, yeah, that sounds right. It kind of all comes back a little bit." This takes us to Aisha and Krista, the other two people mentioned in Becky's police statement. Aisha was called as a witness for the prosecution at trial. When asked about seeing Hay at the end of school, she responded, "Yes, I remember seeing her." When asked what she was doing, her response is, "I saw her talking to Adnan." Now, the prosecution uses this evidence as part of its closing argument to prove Adnan had to kill Hay. After all, he had asked for a ride earlier in the day. Aisha saw the two talking at the end of class. Unless something strange happened in those next few minutes, it's reasonable to believe Adnan got that ride and, at the end of the ride, killed her. There's only one problem, and that problem comes in the form of Krista.
We don't know what Aisha told the police, The report of her interview is very brief and wasn't even written until 2.5 weeks later. All it says is that Aisha saw Hay that afternoon at 2:15 p.m. and that Hay was in good spirits and she did not mention any problems. Based on the report, you'd think that Aisha hadn't really seen anything relevant to the case. But Chris had talked to Aisha early in the evening on January 13th, and she says Aisha did see something important.
When we were talking, she said that she had heard from Hay's brother and that they couldn't find Hay. So when I explained to her, you know, well, in first period class, I heard Adnan asked Hay for a ride. Has anybody talked to him? And she's like, well, no, but in psychology, she said that something came up and she wasn't able to give him a ride anymore, so she didn't take him anywhere after school.
Krista's statement is pretty shocking. The jurors at Adnan's trial were given every reason to believe he requested a ride from Hay, that Hay agreed to give that ride, and unless something strange happened, he received that ride. As it turns out, if we believe some combination of the statements by Krista, Aisha, and Becky, something came up for Hay toward the end of the day. She had somewhere else to be and something else to do. And unless Adnan was able to get into her car by hook or by crook, that ride didn't take place. Now the question is, if defense counsel asked any of these witnesses about something coming up for Hay, would they have provided testimony that helped Adnan? Certainly seems to be the case, but with witnesses, you never know. And never is that more clear than with the two witnesses who apparently saw Adnan after the immediate aftermath of school, those witnesses being Debbie as well as Aisha. As noted before, in her statement to detectives on March 26th, Debbie recalled seeing Adnan after school on January 13th, 1999. Specifically, she recalled seeing Adnan at about 2:45 p.m. at the guidance counselor's office, along with some other students. She recalled Adnan having his gym bag and talking about him going to track practice. In that same interview, Debbie recalled seeing Hay between 2:45 p.m. and 3:15 p.m. on the afternoon of the 13th. That said, for reasons we'll discuss in a later episode, by the time trial rolls around, the prosecution has written Debbie out of its timeline. Its claim at trial is that Adnan has strangled Hay in the Best Buy parking lot by 2:36 p.m., at which point in time he makes a phone call from the Best Buy payphone asking to be picked up. That said, the prosecution does call Debbie as a witness primarily to read from Hay's diary and to discuss the relationship between Hay and Adnan. During cross-examination, defense counsel covers largely the same grounds. She says she has no further questions, and you can almost imagine her in her head about to sit down, done with her interrogation of Debbie. At that point, however, defense counsel has a bit of a Columbo moment. She pulls out the March 26th statement. She says, in effect, there is just one more thing, and she asks Debbie, do you recall telling detectives that you saw Adnan at the guidance counselor's office at 2:45 p.m. on January 13th, Debbie's response, yes. It's hard to underscore how important this testimony would have been had Adnan's first trial ended in a jury verdict. Here we have a prosecution witness becoming an alibi witness. Prosecution's claim is Adnan has killed Hay at Best Buy by 2:36, and here we have Debbie repeating her claim she saw Adnan still at school 2:45 p.m. on his way to track practice. Now, of course, the first trial didn't end in a jury verdict. It ended in a mistrial after the judge referred to defense counsel as a liar. So your question at this point might be, what happened between the first trial and the second trial? Well, let's fast forward. About 2 months later, Debbie is again called as a witness for the prosecution. Again, the prosecution's claim is that Hay has been killed by 2:36. And again, prosecution writes Debbie out of the timeline. Well, cross-examination, defense counsel pulls out the statement from March 26. She is cross-examining Debbie. And here are the two most important Q&As from that cross-examination. Question, and you told them that you saw Adnan on that day, referring to the 13th before he went to practice. Answer, I don't remember. Question, and you recall that you also told them that you spoke to him and some other kids? Answer, no. That's the difference between guilt and innocence. It's my firm belief that if Debbie simply repeated her testimony from the first trial at the second trial, we would have had a not guilty verdict. Adnan would be an innocent man. Now, of course, that leaves the question, would that be an innocent man being set free or a guilty man being sent free? It's unclear. At first, Debbie is quite certain that she saw Adnan on January 13th. Later in her statement to detectives, however, she says, could have been the day before, could have been the day after. Again, there's a problem, though. The day before January 13th, as I said before, January 12th, Woodlawn didn't have practice. They had a track meet. The day after January 13th, January 14th, it was a snow day. There was no school and therefore no track practice. So the question becomes, once again, did Debbie have the right day? Did she see Adnan? Did she see him at 2:45? And would that have exonerated Adnan had she given this testimony at trial?
I wonder what happened in those 2 months, right? I mean, it's quite disturbing that a witness's testimony would change from trial one to trial two. And I really want to find out why at some point. But so let's just taking a look at Adnan's day. Now we're at the end of a school day, and it seems like what he remembers of the school day does pretty much match up to other witness statements. It seems pretty corroborated that when he says he was in school, he was in school. And when he says he went off campus that day, he was off campus, which takes us to 2:15, which is the end of school. And it's when they're dismissed. Adnan had told me that essentially between dismissal and track practice, which is about an hour later, he would just kind of tool around school. He would either hang out in school with friends, or he would go to the library, check his email. And part of the problem was, you know, when he got to trial, he had no way to verify for sure what he was doing on the 13th, because his recollection of being with Asia, in fact, was not supported when Gutierrez told him that the date didn't check out. So let's pick up there, and let's talk about Asia, Colin.
Asia, you might recall, is the person who says she saw Adnan at the library that afternoon. She sent letters to Adnan to that effect on March 1st and March 2nd, right after his arrest. And she's the centerpiece of Adnan's current claim of ineffective assistance of counsel based upon his trial attorney's failure to contact her before trial. Now, in a future episode, we'll focus upon Asia's recollection of seeing Adnan on January 13th. What I wanted to do now, though, was to focus upon Adnan's recollection of seeing Asia on January 13th. In his post-conviction review proceeding in 2010, Adnan testified to the following. He remembers going to the library on January 13th. He was there to check his email. He remembers this being January 13th because the next 2 days, January 14th and January 15th, were snow days. While there, he recalls seeing Asia McLean and then her boyfriend. According to Adnan, he was at the library until about 3 o'clock when he left to start getting for track practice, and track practice started at 3:30. Now, is it possible that Adnan is lying? Sure. It's also possible he's mistaken. What seems abundantly clear, however, is that his story in 2010 is consistent with the story he told in 1999. In 1999, Adnan's attorney sent her law clerk to prison to talk to Adnan on July 13th, and we have the notes in that interaction. Pretty short. At the top, we have a note about Adnan working with Debbie on putting together Hayes school assembly. At the bottom, we have Adnan's school schedule from January 13th. And in the middle, we have a series of four notations. The first notation has Adnan's email address, as well as the password Poppy. This was created by Hay. It was the pet name that she used for him. The second notation says January 14th to January 15th snow days. The third notation says Asia McLean saw him in the library at 3 o'clock. Asia's boyfriend saw him too. And the fourth notation says track starts at 3:30. Now again, could Adnan have been lying in 1999? Sure. Also could have been mistaken. But again, what seems abundantly clear is these notations corroborate Adnan's testimony in 2010. If he was telling the truth in 99, it's likely he was telling the truth when he testified in 2010.
Asia wasn't Adnan's only alibi witness for that day. A second witness also saw him after school, Coach Sy, his track coach. Back at the time of Adnan's trial, though, no one realized this because Coach Sy said he couldn't be certain about the date. But he did remember having a conversation with Adnan on a warm day in January with temperatures in the 50s towards the end of Ramadan. That practice stood out to him because the indoor track team had been able to practice outside for once. And he remembered talking to Adnan on the far side of the track, close to the stream, while Adnan was stretching. Coach Sy had asked him about Ramadan and fasting and what it meant, and they talked for a bit. And Coach Sy said, on the day this talk happened, from what he remembered, Adnan was there on time and left on time. But even though Coach Sy didn't recall the date of this conversation, it turns out that that date could only have been January 13th. Assuming his memory of practicing outside was correct, there's no other day it could have been. During the last 2 weeks of Ramadan, there were only 2 days in which the temperatures went above 40 degrees, January 12th and January 13th. On both those days, the weather was in the 50s. There was no track practice on January 12th, however, as the team was at a track meet that day. Coach Sy was definitely there. Woodlawn took first place. That leaves us with only January 13th, and that means that Coach Sy can confirm a significant chunk of Adnan's alibi for that day. Adnan, for his part, has a clear memory of being at track. In fact, back in March of 1999, he told his attorney that he was sure he'd been at practice that day, because he remembered talking to his coach about the prayers he'd be leading at mosque the next day on the 14th. That Coach Sy remembers Adnan being there on time that day is also a contradiction to all of Jay's stories. In every account he's given, he's told the cops and the prosecutor and the jury that Adnan showed up late that day to practice. In fact, as much as an hour or more late.
What time do you take him back to school?
I don't recall the sun was going down. Track practice.
Sunset was at 5:04 p.m. that day. So according to Jay's story, Adnan left Patapsco State Park for practice at about 4:30 to 5 p.m., which means Adnan only got there about a half hour before practice ended. It's unlikely the coach would have recalled him being there on time if he showed up that late. Of course, Jay also seems to think the practice ended at 6:45 p.m., when the coach said it ended at 5:30.
How do you know what time to get back?
He called me on the cell phone again.
Do you recall what time he called you?
Maybe like 6:45, something like that.
In Jay's second interview to the cops, he doesn't say what time Adnan goes to practice, but based on the phone calls he says Adnan received as they were driving up to Woodlawn High School, Adnan didn't show up till after 5 p.m. Here's how Jay describes, or at least tries to describe, the trip back from Patapsco State Park to Woodlawn High School.
We leave there, I believe. Can you bear with me for a minute? Okay, we left there. I took him back to school and I dropped him off.
Jay does that a lot, by the way. That thing where he sounds like an actor who's forgotten the next line. Luckily, the detectives are always willing to help him out. They give him time to think about it. They give him hints, suggestions, reminders. Their influence can likely be seen in the fact that by the time of the second interview, Jay's story about when track ended moves closer to the truth.
I remember the track practice got out at about 5:45, so that's when I left. And how did you know that it... Yeah, I still had his cell phone. He called me.
He called you?
Yes.
I can count in one hand the number of things that Jay has been consistent on in every story he's ever told. But here's one of them. Jay has maintained from the start that Adnan was late to practice that day.
Did he talk about anything that he had to do with practice?
He just said he had to run a lot.
Had to run?
Yeah, and that he was late.
He was late getting there?
Yes.
But even though Jay's story is consistent, it's still wrong. It's also worth noting that Jay wasn't just wrong about Adnan being late or what time practice ended. He's also wrong about Adnan having to run, quote unquote, a lot. Because Adnan definitely wasn't running a lot that day. It was Ramadan and he was fasting. As a result, Coach Sy wouldn't let him practice for the rest of the team. Instead, he'd sit in for light jogs around the track. I don't know why Adnan's attorney didn't realize that Coach Sy had seen him at track that day. Maybe she never received copies of the police notes that show January 13th was the only day he could have been talking about. Or maybe she did get them and didn't understand their importance. Either way, Coach Sy has a very specific and credible memory of Adnan not being late for practice that day. Although Jay's stories make up for in variety what they lack in credibility, there is no reason to credit any of his versions of events over the singular statement given by Coach Sy. Adnan was almost certainly at practice that day, and on time. and, by his coach's judgment, acting totally normal. Adnan's memories of what happened that day are less clear following track practice, because it wasn't until 9 months later that Adnan and his attorneys even found out that anything that took place after 4 or 5 p.m. was relevant. At trial, the state claimed Adnan and Jay had gone to Kathy's together at about 6 p.m. But Kathy wasn't even disclosed as a witness until September, 1 month before the scheduled trial date.
Adnan does remember going to Kathy's apartment with Jay exactly once. He didn't really know Kathy. He also didn't really know Jen, and I think Kathy and Jen were friends, but he happened to be with Jay at some point and they went to the apartment. Now, Adnan himself has never been able to verify that it was on January 13th. The first time he ever realized that it was part of the state's case or narrative, or it figured into anything at all, was at trial. And he just is not able to say for sure or not whether the visit was on that day. But what he does remember is that when he got the call asking about Hey Man, he was in his car and he was not at her apartment.
So did Adnan and Jay actually go to Kathy's apartment that night? I'm skeptical, because if Adnan and Jay really did visit Kathy's on January 13th, then why is almost everything that Kathy says about it at odds with everything Jay says? Their stories can't be reconciled. Either Kathy is completely wrong about everything that happened, or Jay is. Adnan's trip to Kathy's happened at some point, just probably not on January 13th. Significantly, neither Jay nor Jen remembered Adnan going to Kathy's in their first statements to the police. In fact, in Jay's first story, he never mentioned visiting Kathy or Jeff at all. Here's what he says about where Adnan was when the cops called him.
Okay. When he gets the call from the officer, where are you guys? Are you up at the parking lot?
No, we're at a restaurant in Chin County.
Where exactly? What's the name of the restaurant?
I think we're at McDonald's on Long Road.
By trial, though, Jay has gone from saying that he made zero trips to Kathy's to saying that he made three trips that day. Once at about 4:30 p.m., once at about 6 p.m., and once about 10 p.m. These three new trips appeared after the cops had made some mistakes in interpreting the cell data, which led them to falsely conclude that Jay had been at Kathy's from 4:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. I won't go into technical details here, you can find them on my blog, but long story short, the cops screwed up. They misread the cell data, and they thought it was saying that Jay was at Kathy's from 4:30 to 5, even though he wasn't. Consequently, in Jay's second interview, his story changed to match the cops' misconceptions. He told the cops he'd been at Kathy's three times, just like they thought, even though it's completely impossible for the first trip to have occurred. Kathy wasn't even home then, which means Jay couldn't have been hanging out with her and smoking a blunt like he says he was. So we know Jay's willing to lie about going to Kathy's, even when that lie is easily disproven. That leaves us with Kathy. Why does she think Adnan's trip happened on January 13th? Well, as it turns out, because the cops told her it had happened on the 13th. At the second trial, here's what Kathy testified to. Question. And on the day, a month later, when that day came up in conversation, did you remember that it was on the 13th of January? Answer. I don't think I remembered a specific date, no. Question. Somebody told you that date, did they not? Answer. I think it was Detective McGillivray. Question. Detective McGillivray, you did not have any independent recollection of your own. The day this person came with Jay occurred actually on the 13th? Answer, no, I don't think so. This is where it gets a little bit fishy. Detective McGillivray was feeding information to Kathy that he shouldn't have possessed in the first place, because Kathy was interviewed on March 9th, and at that point, neither Jay nor Jen had ever mentioned the Kathy trip to the cops. So, how could McGillivray have told Kathy what day Adnan and Jay visited her when, at least officially, no one's ever told him that Adnan and Jay went to Kathy's at all? So, Kathy's memory of Adnan's trip to her house isn't entirely organic. It's been influenced by the cops. And based on the details she does remember, what she's describing doesn't sound like January 13th. Like, what Jay was wearing that day. Here's what Jay said he had on.
I think I had on a pair of tan jeans, some work boots, and a plaid coat, like a wool plaid coat.
Kathy's memory is slightly different.
Maybe a black coat, unfortunately really don't remember, a black hat, or like a fisherman's hat with a string.
Okay, and it's
black.
Black.
And Jay says that between his second trip to Kathy's and his third trip, he changed his clothes.
When you went back to your house after Adnan dropped you off, did you change your clothes?
Yes.
And what did you do with the clothes?
I put them in a plastic bag.
Kathy doesn't remember that.
I think I would have noticed if he had changed clothes, so I'm thinking that no, it was the same outfit.
Okay.
And here's what Kathy says Jay was talking about when he and Adnan came to her apartment.
When Jay came in, he was telling me that they were going to go to the movie store and then they were going to meet up with Stephanie.
She also testified that Jay told her that he and Adnan had been picked up by someone, but she was never clear who.
So I was like, so wait a minute, who's coming to pick you up here? And I never really got it figured out.
Okay.
And here's the problem. Everything that Kathy remembers Jay saying that night involves references to events that would not have been happening on January 13th. She says Jay and Adnan, where they're coming from, are going to a video store, which definitely didn't happen according to every other story Jay has given. Jay did work at an adult video store that was not far from Kathy's apartment, and he often had Adnan drop him off at work. But if that's what Jay was talking about, the Kathy trip wasn't on January 13th. He didn't begin working at the adult video store until January 31st. Also, Stephanie had an away basketball game that night. She didn't get home till 10 p.m. Adnan and Jay couldn't have had plans to go see her because Adnan was at Moss by then. Then there are the references Jay made to being picked up by someone at Kathy's apartment. But unless there was a third conspirator in the murder, that wouldn't have been happening either. Then there's the biggest problem of all, the phone call. The one Kathy overhears and thinks is so incriminating. Kathy believed that Adnan was talking to a friend, and in serial, she said it sounded like a best friend even. Compare Kathy's description of that phone call with the phone call that Jay says happened.
We stayed there for a while until we're interrupted by a phone call. He wakes up, he answers his phone. Hayes family. They're looking for Hayes. He tells them he has no knowledge where she is.
Jay says the only person who called while they were at Kathy's was Hayes' brother. Kathy says that Adnan only received one phone call while they were at her place. But there's no way the call Kathy overheard was a call from Hayes' brother. Adnan would not have been saying to him, "What do I do? What do I say?" That doesn't make sense. So who was it that Kathy overheard Adnan talking to, and why didn't Jay hear this conversation? In serial, Sarah Koenig speculated that maybe Aisha had been the caller Kathy overheard. Even though Jay never heard that call, and if you believe his trial testimony, all the possible calls from that time period were either Hayes' brother or the cops. But Aisha thought she talked to Adnan later that evening, after the cops had called him. She also didn't describe Adnan as freaking out like Kathy heard. Here's what Krista remembers about that conversation.
And I do remember her saying that he sort of sounded annoyed when he was talking to her, like, why did you tell the cop, like, kind of like, why did you tell the cops that she might have been with me, like we weren't together or whatever? Because I talked to her after she had talked to him.
So the hypothetical Aisha call doesn't really fit what we know. There's another explanation, though, for why the call Kathy overheard doesn't match any calls made January 13th. The call she heard happened on a different day entirely. Remember, January 13th wasn't the only day the cops were trying to get in touch with Adnan. It also wasn't the only day that Adnan was hanging out in the general area where Kathy's apartment was located. Based on the cell records, Adnan was actually down there pretty frequently, about 13 times in all, after January 13th.
Then a few minutes later, he got a call from the police department, and that's...
How do you know Adnan got a call from the police department?
Because that's what he does. He holds the phone away and says the police, and at that time I started to panic.
Were you inside the apartment or outside the apartment?
We were just leaving. We were stepping from the foyer into the hallway.
Here's what Kathy said.
So he leaves.
I'm not leaving.
He opens your apartment door.
The door was locked. I mean, I had a chain, the deadbolt, at the bottom, locked.
So and he goes through the whole nine yards?
He goes the whole nine. I mean, maybe the chain wasn't locked, but he undoes the deadbolt, the other lock, and walks out and closes the door behind him. And I look at Jay. And Jay was smoking a cigarette at the time and then waits like 1 or 2 seconds and then he gets up. He's like, hold on. And then he like gets up and like and closes the door open.
It doesn't seem like they're describing the same event. In fact, there's only one point of similarity between Jay's story about Adnan's trip to Kathy's and Kathy's story about Adnan's trip to her place. Both of them remember Adnan acting weird. kind of slumped over, maybe even asleep. But here's the thing. Jay does not attribute this weirdness to, you know, the whole being a murderer thing. Jay thinks the reason Adnan's acting weird is because he'd given him something to smoke.
He's feeling a little nauseous from a cigarette that I'd given him prior to going in the house. So he sits away from the group.
Jay gives a similar story in his recent Intercept interview. He says, I made Adnan smoke one time. Got a little high, got a little weird. Didn't say that much. That sounds an awful lot like Kathy's description of how Adnan was when he visited her place. Weird and quiet. But Jay doesn't seem to associate this event with the night of the murder at all. So if Jay thinks the reason Adnan was acting weird at Kathy's house had nothing to do with the events of January 13th, maybe that's because the event that Kathy and Jay are talking about happened on a different day entirely. So if Adnan and Jay's trip to Kathy's wasn't on January 13th, when was it? Well, there are a few possibilities, but here's one guess. Based on the cell site records, the call Kathy heard was from Yasser on February 15th, after Yasser had been contacted by the cops about the anonymous phone call they received. There is a call from Yasser to Adnan's cell phone that day, and the cell site data shows it pinged L655B, which is consistent with the call at Kathy's apartment. And before the Yasser call, several calls were made from Adnan's phone to Stephanie, which would explain why Jay was talking about their plans to go see her later. That would mean that Kathy's memory about the day of the trip was very wrong, but her memory about Adnan's trip has to be wrong about something. Here's something else weird. Remember Kathy's boyfriend, Jeff? The police talked to him, too, a couple days after talking to Kathy. The cops decided not to save any notes from the interview with Jeff, which means we'll never know if his statement confirmed or contradicted that Adnan had been at Kathy's on January 13th. So, ignoring where the phone was for the moment, who was it that was making all these calls to Adnan during the time period that he was supposedly at Kathy's? The phone records show that from 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., there were three incoming calls. One at 6:07 p.m., one at 6:09 p.m., and one at 6:24 p.m. The general assumption is that the last call at 6:24 was Officer Adcock, and at least in this case, the general assumption seems right. But what about the other two calls, then? In his first interview, Jay only remembers one call, and that was from the cops. By a second interview, he remembers two calls, one from his family, one from the cops. And by trial, Jay now remembers three calls, two from Hay's family and one from the police, which counts for all three calls during that time period. Adnan only recalls one call, and that was from Hay's brother, who then passed the phone to Officer Adcock. It's possible Jay is right, though, and that Hay's brother and Adcock called separately. That would still leave us with one incoming call unaccounted for. Could that be Kathy's mysterious third conspirator? Maybe? Well, probably not. Back at trial, it was assumed that the cell phone records only showed calls that had actually been answered, and incoming calls where no one picked up wouldn't show up. Turns out this was not a safe assumption to make, because the phone company's definition of answered and the human definition of answered aren't always the same. I don't have Adnan's service agreement, so I don't know the terms he's used, but in 1989, there were plenty of phone companies that would have charged for an incoming call that wasn't answered and went to voicemail, even if the caller hung up before the beep. Here's language used by other AT&T agreements from the 2000s. You may be charged for both an incoming and an outgoing call when incoming calls are routed to voicemail, even if no message is left. And chargeable time may also occur for other uses of our facilities, including by way of example, voicemail deposits and retrievals and call transfers. It's worth noting that due to AT&T's first-minute free policy for incoming calls, users weren't actually charged for these incoming calls that went unanswered. They did, however, show up on the bills. So it could be that all those incoming calls on the cell records don't actually represent times when someone picked up Adnan's phone and answered. Jay's constantly evolving stories about who was making these calls is just reflecting his attempts to appease the prosecution, who wanted explanations for every call in the log, even though they weren't real calls. We do know one person who called and left a voicemail for Adnan that day, Krista. That means one of those incoming calls would have been from her. Turns out we have a good idea of when she might have called, too, because Krista saved her phone records from that day. She was on a landline, so they don't show all the calls made, like a cell phone bill would, but they do show two calls she made using Star 69. And based on that, her voicemail to Adnan was sometime around 6 p.m.
How many times that night did you call Adnan?
That I can remember, definitely twice. possibly three times after he left the hang up on my machine,
which was at 5:38.
Right. And it was, you know, I obviously got the call 5:51. I hit star 69 and saw that I had a hang up, and that's who the number it went back to was. And I remember trying to call him shortly thereafter and him not answering, which I thought was weird because usually if he called me, especially, he would always answer the phone if I called him right back. Mm-hmm. And then when I didn't hear from him, I know I called him at least one other time just because I thought it was a little out of sorts that, you know, he didn't return the call right away, especially when he called me to begin with.
So how long, again, would you estimate it was between the first call and second call?
I mean, I'd probably say an hour.
So if Adnan's cell records are showing incoming calls that were routed to voicemail, that means that either the 607 or 609 call was Krista. And if Krista is right about her second call to Adnan coming an hour later, that means she is one of the two Linkin Park phone calls. More on that later.
Today we learned how the reality of Adnan's day on January 13th was quite possibly very different from the perception created by the prosecution at trial. But what about Hay? What if nearly nothing we've been told about her day on the 13th turned out to be true? We'll discuss that very real possibility next time on Undisclosed.
Special thanks to Amr Naji, our sound editor, Ramiro Marquez, who created our theme music, and Baluki, who provided our logo. Dennis Robinson is our executive producer. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is UndisclosedPod. Tweet us your questions and comments using the hashtag Undisclosed.
The Undisclosed Podcast is brought to you in part by the Adnan Syed Trust, a legal defense fund that helps to pay Adnan's legal fees and associated investigative efforts. All proceeds raised through advertising on today's episode of Undisclosed were given to the trust. To learn more about the trust and to donate to our efforts to free Adnan, please visit www.launchgood.com/freeAdnan.